This is one in a series of podcasts from Lutheran Education Australia, My Principals Who Serve in Lutheran Education.
In his letter to the Romans, Paul advises against conforming to the customs of today's society. I'm drawn to Eugene Peterson's translation of Romans 12:2. He writes, "Don't be so well adjusted to the culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what he wants from you and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings the best out of you and develops well-formed maturity in you." In today's LEA podcast, we're hearing from a principal who is leading a school that has fixed its attention on God. Staff, students, and parents in this school community are being transformed by the renewing of their minds as they reassess how best to meet the diverse needs of today's children and as they challenge long-held worldly beliefs about teaching paradigms and learning cultures. Hello, I'm Jane Mueller and I serve as the principal of Living Faith Lutheran Primary School. Today I'm chatting with Terry Taylor. Terry is the principal of St. Michael's Lutheran Primary School in Harndorf. St. Michael's is the oldest Lutheran school in Australia, notching up more than 180 years of history. Today, the school offers a primary school education to families in the Adelaide Hills. Terry is going to share with us a story of change management through a learning support lens. Thank you, Terry, for chatting with me today.
It's my pleasure.
Terry, let's jump straight into it because there's so many good things to hear about today. St. Michael's has undergone significant change in terms of culture, mindset, and processes in relation to supporting students with learning needs. What was the catalyst? What was happening in the school that prompted the change?
When I arrived at St. Michael's in 2016, the school had undergone significant enrolment decline, and that also meant staffing decline. And so our leadership staff to that point had a very strong role in helping teachers with tricky children, but all of a sudden they weren't there anymore. We couldn't afford to have those staff. So added to that also was an increase in the number of children who had been diagnosed with ASD. And I think schools all around Australia are finding that there is an increase in that diagnosis now. Anyway, we found ourselves in this situation of managing children's anxiety, but without the support that we'd had in the past. And we were managing them only when they got to a crisis or meltdown point. And so that in turn led to unsafe environments for our students, tricky environments for our teachers to be working in, and lots of complaints from families that we had too many disruptive students. So I think that's probably something that most schools have to deal with from time to time. But then in 2017, two of our staff members were invited to participate in a postgraduate degree at Flinders University here in South Australia. And that was focusing on special education with a focus on ASD. And these staff members, Mel Smith and Georgia Pope, were really passionate learners who saw that there was a problem with the way that we were managing children who had ASD or anxiety, and they knew that there had to be a better way. And so they were the ones to really plant the seed for us around how we would implement some whole school processes that would improve the outcomes for children with ASD, but also help all children in our school.
So then fast forward to 2021, what does a St. Michael's experience look like for a student with, for example, ASD today?
It is phenomenally different. From enrolment to participation, it's really transformed from what it was in the past. And particularly, I guess I'll focus on children with ASD because that's really where our biggest focus has been in this change. And like I said earlier, the changes that we've made for those children in particular have really had benefit for all of our children. So those students who were identified with ASD or those who we imputed to have ASD, they would come to school and the process of transition would be long and it would be slow now. Those children get social stories, And those social stories are given to them before they start school with us, and they get built upon as they travel through their time here at St Michael's. We talk to parents about what to expect at school, and that's probably one of the really big things that's changed is that conversation we have with the parents of children who have those special needs, because they know their children at home, and they know that and they've set up an environment at home that is perfect for their child, and often they don't understand that school is going to be very different, and particularly with children with ASD. You know, three of the big things, for example, that are problems or challenges for them are social situations, being able to communicate verbally and being able to process that verbal communication, and also managing change. And here they are coming into a school setting, and those three things, when we think about it, we are, you know, they are huge. Schools are huge social environments. We talk a lot in schools and expect children to process that verbal communication really quickly. And things are always changing. Children are unpredictable. Schools are unpredictable. So we're putting these children into this environment. Helping parents to understand that is a really big part of what we do from the beginning. And our staff have spent a lot of time learning as well. So that's probably one of the things that's made one of the biggest differences for us. We have developed an understanding of what autism looks like in general. And so we have made some really big changes in the way that we do things in our classroom. The experience for students at St Michael's today, our teachers have structure and routine in their classrooms that perhaps we didn't have in the past. There is a lot less talking on our part. The classroom is a much quieter environment. There's a lot less visual stimulation in our classrooms. All of the staff carry lanyards that have visual cues on them so the children can use those when they need to, rather than having to rely on us speaking, particularly when they're in that heightened state. And we have learned to build breaks through the day for those children who need them, the regulation breaks. We also have introduced flexible learning spaces, and I know a lot of schools have done that, but part of what we're doing in that intention is to design an environment where those children who need some sensory deprivation or input can find that within their classrooms. So there's a lot of flexibility, not just with kind of seating, but with how we actually arrange our classrooms to help support those children in particular. The other thing that we did, which was kind of thinking a little bit further from that, was looking at our outdoor spaces and how can we provide sensory areas in our school that are going to support those children. I think one of the biggest things that we did, though, was to develop a whole staff, or all the staff got together and developed a document, really, that outlined our beliefs and how we were going to support our children going forward, those children with ASD, and how that would then help all children in our school.
You mentioned at the outset, Terry, that supporting students with needs was tricky once upon a time at St Michael's. What is the experience today for teachers of students with ASD or anxiety or other learning needs?
I am so proud of our staff at St Michael's. They have really had to become learners in this space. Generally, the ASD students don't get to that meltdown stage anymore. Generally, the classroom is much calmer, and the teachers, through the PD that we've offered over time, have learnt to, first of all, learnt what ASD is and how it presents in children in school, and I think that's been pivotal for us. But they've also learnt how to read the triggers. They know now when to offer breaks for children. They know that there is some people there to help support them in ways that are needed. They work very closely with parents and are very open in their communication. I'm really proud of them for that. And they've learnt that they have to be, because you can't really make a big change to any child if you are holding back on the information that you share with parents. We created a wellbeing room, and we have a wellbeing dog who's part of the staff in there. And that's a safe place for our children to have scheduled breaks. So the scheduled breaks have been really important for our children. And that's something that we learnt through the work that our diverse learning coordinator, Georgia Pope and Mel Smith, kind of brought back to us after they did their initial learning. Those scheduled breaks happen in this place called the Wellbeing Room. And so that for our teachers is really great because they have to stick to this schedule of sending the children out for their regulation breaks and then the children come back in. So in some ways it's tricky because children are coming and going. But the benefit that they see in the classroom is a much calmer child, a much more focused child, and a child who's ready to work at the time that they come in. I guess one of the things that has been different for us, or one of the things that we've learnt, is that children don't mean to, the children who break down and who get to that meltdown stage, they don't want to be there, and they get to that stage. Nobody wants to be out of control like that. And so we started to really look at them differently, look at children differently. They're not throwing a tantrum, or they're not being aggressive, and they're not throwing things because they are naughty. They're doing it because they can't manage and control themselves. And so our job as educators around them is to see what that behaviour is and to try to figure out what the function of that behaviour is and how we're going to support them to develop more functional behaviours as they go through their time at school.
It sounds like you're representing two different schools, yet it's the same school described just a small number of years apart. So you identified a significant area of concern just a small number of years ago. What were some of the key processes or steps that brought about change for St Michael's?
I think that the model that we had was, from talking to other schools, a model that many, many schools still function with today, and for no other reason than they don't know what else to do. But that model rarely honours or respects the children involved in the school. Georgia Pope, our diverse learning coordinator, that's the name that we gave that role instead of a learning support, she says often, when you know better, you do better. And so the first step for us was to educate ourselves and to gain knowledge. And we were really fortunate to have some very passionate people on staff who were determined to find a better way of helping the children in our school. The next thing that we had to do was to work out what we believed and what we valued. And as it turns out, I'm a really fortunate principal because I'm surrounded with people who generally want to make a difference in the lives of the children and are really willing to put in the hard work that it takes to do that. Because these children are tricky and working it out takes time. We identified those whole school practices that we needed to be consistent with and to establish throughout the whole school. We worked out what we could do, and we also worked out what we couldn't do, because schools are still a mainstream place of education and there are some things that we just couldn't do. So we had to be really clear with ourselves about what we could and couldn't offer. We involved all of our staff. So our LSOs, our admin staff, they were also involved in professional learning. They were involved in discussions about student support. Even our business manager can tell you which of the children have ASD and what needs to happen with those children. If she's out and about and has some interaction, she can tell you what she's going to do to help them. We established the wellbeing room, and as I talked about that before, but that was really pivotal for us in being able to help manage the sensory breaks and the regulation time that the children needed. It's also open at lunchtime, so if there are issues or even if those children just are having a bad week or a bad day, we'll schedule them into the wellbeing room during that time. And so that's been really, really important. But I think another step in that process is to make ourselves really vulnerable as learners. These children, as I keep saying, they're tricky, and we gave ourselves permission to try and to make mistakes and to learn and to fail and to try again. And that cycle has just continued for us because every child is different. And as learners, as adult learners, we need to be really open to that you know, sometimes we're not going to get it right and we go, okay, let's move on. That's what we do.
And that's such an important part of staff culture, the ability to make mistakes and learn and grow from those mistakes as a staff member.
Absolutely.
Change often involves abandoning rituals or beliefs we've held for a long time, and it can mean unlearning theories that once shaped our worldview. And so with that in mind, and respecting the individual and collective experience of the St. Michael's staff, how did you get buy-in from the wider staff community?
We had lots of questions from our staff. Children with ASD can be, as we know, non-compliant. They can be slow to complete tasks. They can be violent. They can be aggressive. They can be avoiders. And they can just be really, really tricky. And one of the things that we had to learn as staff was to let go of the power that we have. And that was something that really did take some time for some of us to, and I include myself in that because that's how I've learnt, you know, I am in charge, this is my classroom, they will do what I say. And for us, we have to let go of that power and go, okay, it's not about me, it's about what this child needs to actually thrive in my classroom. And so that was probably one of the really big things. We had an OT come in and talk to us at one point, and she talked about these, you know, these three, I guess, parts of helping a child be functional. One of them is the environment, the task, and the child themselves. And she talked to us about the fact that we could change the environment, we can change the task, but we can't change the child. And many of our staff were really, really confronted by that idea that, you know, no, my job is to change that child. That's what I have to do. And so we had to, you know, that took quite some time to work through. And probably experience too of going, actually, no, we're not going to change that child, but we can do this and we can change the task. We can change what the environment looks like. We can change the task, and actually that does make it better. And that child will give us functional behaviour if we can do those things for them. So it comes back again to that education. But, yeah, the letting go of the power is a really big thing for all of us, I think.
Mm. Did you face any resistance from any staff?
Not resistance as such. I think, you know, learning is gaining information and gaining knowledge. And I think once we started to practice what we were doing, what we were learning, once we started to see some results and started to see that it made a difference, that's when you know, we got the full-on buy-in with everybody. It wasn't so much about resistance. I think, you know, these are tricky situations that our teachers are in, and, you know, it's changing that headset and that mindset that probably was the hardest thing for some of us to, like I said, touched on before, to actually say, I'm not the one here, this is my classroom, but I actually have to change the dynamic of what I'm doing here to help that child and to put the child first in this environment. So, yeah, it wasn't so much about not buying, it was about learning to do better.
Terry, have you read the book called The Self-Driven Child?
I haven't, but I will put that on my reading list.
It's a book by William Stixrud and Ned Johnson, and they write that as we increasingly micromanage children and everything from education to friendships, the rates of anxiety and depression in children rise. And they illustrate how modern society has deviated away from the factors that are important to human happiness and well-being. Instead of trusting children with choices, we've become well-adjusted or conditioned to believe children should be controlled and managed, which causes debilitating stress and destroys motivation. And so I love what you mentioned earlier about letting go of the power. What you say about us needing to let go of our power when working with children aligns with that message from Stixrud and Johnson's book.
Yeah, I love that. That's really good. And I think creating, you know, we talk about creating child-centered environments, but, you know, if we're going to be really serious about that, it means we need to some extent take ourselves out of that, at least our egos out of that.
I couldn't agree more. And so tell me more. How does your team nurture self-regulation and self-management for students with learning and behavioural needs?
We have, it actually is quite structured. So It's not a random thing, and it is planned. So we have the regulation breaks that we put in place. So at 10 o'clock and 12 o'clock, certain children will be sent off to the wellbeing room. And so as they get older, they start to do that themselves or start to manage their breaks themselves. But we have that in place. We have things like the social stories. Those things are in place and they're planned and they're added to in a planned way. We have communication strategies with parents and regular team meetings with the parents of these children so that we know what's going on and everybody's on the same page. Nothing is left to randomness. All of the things that we do through our school are planned and processes are put into place that happen right across our school so that our children, you know, that there is a constant routine, that there is a consistent language and everybody knows what is going on all the time. Probably one of the biggest things that is important for us is to remember that you know, kids, they don't want to be behaving badly. You know, that's a low point for them. They want to please us, and we got to trust them, and we also have to work with them so that they can be in a position to be able to do the things that they want to do and be able to regulate themselves so they can show us their best and thrive in our schools.
Oh, that is just so precious, Terry. How have conversations with parents changed since you've adopted this new approach?
I think the conversations, particularly with children who have ASD, they're very direct and we're very transparent. So there's, you know, we explain, as I said earlier, we explain what their child can expect at school, what life at school is like for a child with ASD, but we're also very direct in saying that there are some things that we can do and some things that we can't do. And, you know, we are quite realistic about what we offer families. I think, you know, those blunt conversations about what it's going to be like at school and what our parents need to do as well are really, really important. For example, we have told parents, you know, your child needs to stop playing video games. And if they don't, well, really, you're kind of undermining what we're doing here. And that potentially is going to put your enrollment at risk because we can't do the work that we need to do with your child if you're going to keep doing these things with your child that really makes them aggressive, which is, you know, part of the whole pattern of ASD and brain patterns and things like that. So, you know, we expect parents to back us up.
And those honest conversations show a deep investment in a child, because those honest conversations with parents aren't always easy.
No, they're often really, really hard. But I, like I said earlier, I'm really proud of our staff. They have learned how to have those conversations. And the more they know about, you know, the more we know what we're talking about, the easier it is to have those conversations with families, because we can't assume that our parents of children with ASD or other special needs actually understand what their child is like at school and what the school experience is like for their child. I would guarantee that there are principals or leaders all over, you know, the place listening to this at the moment who would have heard a parent come and say, my child is not like that at home. And the answer to that is no, they're not, because this is not home. And understanding, for parents to understand that home and school are really, really different for a child with ASD is really important, and we have to be clear about that.
That's powerful. Terry, what strategies have you developed to help parents of neurotypical children to invest in a school community that values diversity?
We do things like have a program. We write in our newsletters, so there's information that goes through our newsletters that talks about diversity and how we and the things that we do in our school to value each child. We do assembly presentations as well for the children, but those parents who come along to those or watch them on live streams kind of tap into that as well. We celebrate diversity days, those types of things to help parents to understand. But it's a small community as well, and I think that's important to remember. So our parents and our wider parent community are really, in the most part, very supportive of what we're doing to help children who have additional needs. And I'm quite proud of them for that. And particularly our school board have been really on board with the idea of supporting each child individually and allowing an environment or enabling an environment where every child can thrive at our school.
Mm. So then stepping back and reflecting on the big picture, what's something you wish you'd known earlier?
For many years now, I have been working in schools, far too many to mention. And our schools, we're always wanting to help our children, but with these tricky kids, it's often when they get to crisis point that we jump in. No one wants to lose control. I've said that a couple of times in this podcast, least of all children. They just don't want to be in that spot. And so it makes me really sad that as adults of children in a school who are helping to support children in the school haven't known, people like me haven't known that there is a better way and that there is a much more effective way to help children regulate and to thrive in our schools. And it's just a mystery because that information hasn't been out there for our educators. You know, we're just not taught how to help children who have ASD.
Which leads me to asking you, see if you're prepared to go into this space, what frustrates you about Australia's education system?
Probably exactly that our teachers are put into classrooms and they aren't given the tools that they need to support children who have additional needs. And we're talking specifically at the moment about children with ASD, but there are a whole gamut of children who come into a classroom and teachers are just expected to know what to do and they don't. It would be like, I was thinking about this the other day, it'd be like me, you know, having problem with my heart and going to my GP who looks at everything and expecting my GP to just cure it. The GP doesn't know, you know. I think if we could, our education system and our education training, our unis, they need to be able to provide our teachers with much more specific information about children with additional needs and help teachers to understand what that means. Because, you know, if I talk to any of our pre-service teachers that come into our school, they still don't do that. They didn't do it when I went to university. They still don't do that. And I think that knowledge is power.
I couldn't agree more. It's certainly something that most schools struggle with in terms of upskilling their staff to cater for various learning needs. St. Michael's has undergone significant transformation in terms of welcoming student diversity and supporting parents. For you, Terry, is this a destination or a journey?
Oh, it's definitely a journey. We learn every single day. I think that I said that right at the beginning. You know, we try something, we fail, we try again, we succeed sometimes. I think I've painted us as, being quite successful in this, but in amongst all of that, we have had some spectacular failures as well. And I think that's important for anybody who is going down the path of education to understand is that, you know, we are all learners and it's a bumpy road. We're working with people and those people are little and they don't always understand and they don't have the emotional maturity to process as the adults are. And so, you know, that's something we're learning every day and it's exciting.
I love the terminology you used, spectacular failures.
Yeah.
It's just like Martin Luther, sin boldly.
Yep, we have. But that's okay because you learn from it and then, you try again. When you know better, you do better.
Totally. Terry, we're just about to wrap up, but before we do, what is the one key message you'd like listeners to take away from our chat today?
Well, let's go back to that when you know better, you do better. There is a way to do better with these children. And as school leaders, we have the opportunity and I think really the responsibility to make inclusion a really living part of our school culture. And I think that's the message I'd like to leave out there today.
Fantastic. Terry, it's been a delight to gain some insight into your servant heart, a servant heart that's underpinned by strong leadership. You and the team at St. Michael's are pushing beyond the limitations that some educators feel constrained by, and this is all in the search for authentic solutions for the families you serve so that each wonderfully made child accesses their God-given talents and is given every opportunity to thrive and reach their potential. And this, I believe, sits at the heart of Lutheran education. And so I'm just so proud to call you a colleague. Thank you so much for your time, Terry Taylor.
Thank you. It has been an absolute pleasure.
If you enjoyed this podcast, check out the LEA website, where you'll find more podcasts on a range of topics for anyone interested in leading in Lutheran education.